What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Where do you go for comics new and old?
Garage sales?
Wrong! Where do you see your favorite television and movie stars?
In magazines, mostly.
Wrong again! And where do you go to see the best in cosplay?
Well, there are lots of different options if you're looking for something...
So incredibly wrong! Wizard World Comic Con. Wizard World Comic Con offers live entertainment and gaming, comics new and old, cosplay, toys and memorabilia, and a chance to meet your favorite television and movie stars. Meet Doctor Who star David Tennant and Lord of the Rings star Elijah Wood June 1st through the 3rd in Des Moines, Iowa. Then meet Aquaman Jason Momoa and Luke Cage's Mike Coulter June 8th through the 10th in Columbus, Ohio. For news, celebrity updates, and tickets to future shows, go to wizardworld.com. Don't feel like paying full price? No problem. Use promo code CANDAIR at checkout to get 10% off your tickets. So, where are you going to go for your pop culture fix?
The internet?
Oh, good answer.
Really?
No! Wizard World Comic Con!
Go to wizardworld.com for tickets.
You're listening to the Canned Air Podcast, your sidekick in the quest for knowledge, power, and entertainment. So strap yourselves in and prepare for victory!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And joining us today to talk about their comic Part-Time Night in the Toronto Comics Anthology, we welcome Sean Daly and Aaron Feldman. Thanks for being with us today, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Hello.
Hello. We're going to have a good show this week in our retro roundtable. We're going to be looking at, and Jake, I think this was your idea, was it?
Yeah. I want to talk about coolest and most interesting sci-fi and fantasy races. We're talking alien species, elves, dwarves, Na'vi, whatever the hell. If there's a setting that's created its own culture, its own intelligent race, that's what we're talking about.
I'm excited. This was an exciting topic, and it was difficult. Like, I thought, oh, that'll be easy. When I sat down to write stuff down, I was like, oh, shit.
Man. Yeah.
I've only really got three things here, so I hope the rest of us have some stuff to bring to the table.
I think we'll be fine.
Perfect.
I think he mentioned everyone that I had.
Elves, dwarves. And retro's done.
Then in the comic vault, what are we going to talk about, guys? What do you got?
I'm talking about a funny little webcomic called Extra Fabulous Comics.
Extra Fabulous Comics.
This is something that's been making me laugh for a long while now, and I'm not sure why it took me this long to bring it to the table, so I'm excited to talk about it.
Cool. We're waiting until it was extra fabulous
extra
time.
Fabulous time.
And it's a pretty fabulous evening, so...
I couldn't agree more.
There we go. One of the books we'll be talking about there. Then we're going to turn our full attention over to Sean and Aaron and talk about Part-Time Night. But before we do that, Jake...
You guys should probably head on down to Twitter and follow us at CannedAirPod. Find all the funny jokes and interesting things I post for you there for your education and your entertainment. Really, I'm just trying to enrich you as a human being. And then when you're done there, head to Instagram, where we are at canned_air, doing much the same thing, but a little more picture-centric. And if you like what we do, don't forget we are on Patreon, so toss a couple of bucks a month our way. If you reach that $5 mark or more, you have access to the Founders Club Patreon-exclusive podcast.
And to tack on to that, we're going to be changing the reward tiers a little bit,
yes,
and adding some new ones where you can actually get merch, like t-shirts, decals. I think that's probably about it. Maybe we can throw a mug or something in there somehow. But
that all depends on you.
Yeah. So you're not just getting an unscripted hour show every month for your contribution. You actually get
you're
to
also getting a shirt.
Yeah.
I think it's a fair trade.
I agree. Yeah.
Come on. All right. Well, with that behind us, let's just kick it off with this week's retro roundtable.
I am the current black to the night.
What are we to come up?
That's like.
All right. Favorite fictional fantasy and sci-fi races. Jake, kick us off.
Ooh, all right. I'm going to have to go with something that's... Look, this isn't like a super inspired choice. I just think it's something we can all get behind as like cool in whatever setting you find them. Orcs.
Definitely cool. In the Lord of the Rings, they were disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's the
thing. They came out of those like birthing sacks or whatever. It was horrible.
And you see such a wide range of representations depending on settings. You know, fantasy, even some sci-fi settings have orcs where there's some weird spacefaring species. And I think it's cool that ever since Tolkien kind of brought them into the common...
He introduced them to...
I think he's definitely the person who brought them into the... Yeah, yeah, into common knowledge. They've been... like, taken in as this universally accepted antagonist race. Everybody's at war with the orcs, and the orcs are at war with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you see so many cool designs. You get your Lord of the Rings-style orcs who, like you said, are disgusting, almost mutated people. You know, they've got that very degenerate look to them. The mottled skin and the sharp, dirty teeth and all of that. And they really play up that you know, lowest common denominator angle. These are scavengers and raiders. Other settings are the big, you know, hulking. You got, like, your Warcraft orcs. They're, like, 8 feet tall and 7 feet wide. You know, their biceps bigger than their head. And they've got that, you know, that, ooh, honorable warrior proud race thing going. And then you've got, I've seen some of my favorites, where their interpretation is, like, orcs as pig people. They've got the snouts and the tusks. Yeah, yeah, you see it all over the place.
At least in the Warcraft movie, they had tusks, didn't they? Yep.
They did, yeah. And
most orcs have tusks.
That's sort of a common thing.
Yeah.
Is it? I'm not...
But you're thinking, like, the kind of like this, yeah, Maleficent little henchmen in, like, Sleeping Beauty, where they look like pig people or, like, moblins from Zelda?
Yeah, I'd say moblins definitely in that same vein. Yeah. And then you'll see games going way back. There was... old weird games, something like, you know, I played a game called Warlord's Battlecry, you know, super generic title, but they had very porcine orcs, you know, and some people roll with that, and I always thought that was cool. It's interesting, because you can take it in a lot of directions, but when you hear orc, everyone goes like, oh, he's an asshole, you know, you can kind of assume this is a brutal, warlike creature, and is probably the enemy. So I think they're cool in that you know what they're about right off the bat. That name carries weight.
Did you see that movie, Bright? On
I
Netflix.
Did, yeah.
Their portrayal of orcs was pretty
cool. I thought that was really
interesting. Was that the one with Will Smith and like he's a cop with an orc or something like that?
Yeah, like fantasy is real, pretty much all the fantasy creatures.
I think the movie had a lot of cool things going for it, setting-wise. When I first saw it, I thought for sure, like, oh, this is just Shadowrun, right? But it's like not even affiliated. I'm like, I saw it and I was like, oh, they made a Shadowrun movie. But it's just, like... it is to Shadowrun what GoBots are to Transformers.
Yeah, really.
It's just like kind of a... But yeah, no, it was cool. They just tried to do way too much.
Yeah, if for they a movie. Cut I thought it was going to be a series. But
yeah, four-fifths of the plot lines, it would have been a great movie.
Which movie is this?
Bright.
Oh, I thought that was a series. It's a movie.
No, yeah, it's just a movie.
It should have been a series.
Yeah.
It felt like it was written to be a series. Yeah, but it was just a super dense movie that had
I wondered why Will Smith was in a series like this. Yeah. I was like, that seems odd. Okay.
They're supposed to be making a sequel to it. I guess it did well enough, so.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it got critically panned, but is one of the most successful, or got audiences loved it, though.
Yeah, yeah. You won't find a professional person singing its praises, but it's a very watchable movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. It's at least thought-provoking the way they handle fantasy
like
tropes.
It,
yeah.
Well, check it out.
You should. I mean, you know, don't clear your schedule for it if you got some free time.
I don't clear my schedule for many movies, but...
Fair enough.
Well, what about Sean or Aaron? Who would like to go next? Favorite fictional sci-fi or fantasy race?
Well, I could go... The favorite's a pretty tall order. You know, there's so many that I like.
Sure.
But, you know, so... I don't know if you guys have played a lot of Mass Effect or not. One thing that they did that I haven't seen in a long time is create a sci-fi world that felt pretty much as immersive and inventive as, for me, I haven't seen since Star Wars. And all of their races had very distinct cultures and personalities and even biological traits. Like, there's the group that, you know, they communicate through very subtle smells and scents
oh,
so that when they have to Yeah, I think the Elcor.
Elcor, and when they come from like a high gravity planet, so like motion's really taxing. So,
So when they talk to people, they have to, they're elephant looking, and they have to sort of say what they're, because they don't have subtlety in their voices, it's all in their smells. So they have to say like sarcastically, I think you did a great job, or you know, I'm exasperated now. As you do. So I thought that was really cool. But just like pretty much every race that they created, at least in the first three games, I was really impressed by.
I
don't know if
And the interplay between the races was really interesting as well, you know. I think a setting like that is only as good as the things it implies, you know, as soon as things mm-hmm. start getting really spelled out. But they kind of feed you little bits of information. One of my favorite things about it was always the whole Salarian Krogan dynamic.
Yeah, we've
got this. I guess kind of orc-like species, mm-hmm. in that they're purely warlike. Their whole culture is combative, and then you've got this short-lived but brilliant scientist species that genetically cuts them off, develops a weapon that stops them from reproducing altogether.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and the political implications of that just like ripple through all these games. It was just such a cool concept, you know. It's one of those things.
That's the Mass Effect, right?
Wow. Look at this guy. Out of nowhere.
And the whole thing about all the alien races looking down on humans because they're the baby race.
The upstarts.
They've never been around.
They just showed up.
I see.
I always think of that line where they're talking about the Salarians, who you're almost like your classically alien-looking guys, kind of mm-hmm. like the Greys, big eyes, weird heads, thin fingers, and they burn out at, like, what, 40, 45 years old?
Yeah,
they've got, like, a really high metabolism. And everyone's always talking about, oh, the humans want this concession and this privilege, and they're like, look, the Salarians live maybe half as long as you do, and they've waited 2,000 years for the shit you're asking for right now. You know, there's always that whole thing where every human race in a setting is, they're the people making demands.
Right. You say elephant people?
They look kind of elephant-like, because they walk on all fours. They've
so it's
got
not like,
like
the elephant man. It's
no.
Weren't they kind of like monotone when they talk? Yeah. They really couldn't portray like any
confused
kind
confused
of
alarm. We're under attack. You know, they, like, they've got an
I forgot about them.
Oh, they're the best.
What about you, Sean?
My favorite race, one of them at least, is probably the exact opposite of that. And that there's really no substance to them at all. It's a Kowakian monkey lizards from Star Wars, like Salacious Crumb and Jabba's Barge.
Oh,
just like
the
little
guy.
Laughing.
The cackling weasels.
That's the one. Yeah, there's really no like socio-political implications to their race. They're literally there to laugh at. They're just
I would love to see like a Nova races. Special of one of those things hunting for its prey. It would be humorous.
Exactly. Anything that they do is just inherently funny.
It'd be 2 hours of watching them starve because they can't stop giggling long enough to catch something.
Right.
The next Star Wars movie.
Yeah, there's no subtlety at all, which is probably why I like them so much. They're just funny to look at and funny to listen to. No substance whatsoever.
You remind me of a, your offering to the roundtable reminds me of a book I read not too long ago. It was... I had to get the taste of episode 8 out of my mouth. But I was still in a Star Wars mood, so I was like, well, maybe there's a new book out or something that's pretty cool. And I found, I can't remember what it is. I think it's just called The Legends of Luke Skywalker. And what the book was it starts with a bunch, like, those Canto Bight kids on a shuttle, heading back to the planet. And as they're traveling, they're all telling different Luke Skywalker stories. Huh. And one of them, it was so fucking ridiculous, was about a louse, like a parasitic, like louse-sized being that is, you know, smart like a human would be.
Sure.
Living on this, what was it, Salacious Crumb?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And in that scene in Jedi, right before Luke gets dropped down to the Rancor, what this book says happens is that this louse jumps onto Leia and starts communicating with her, like saying, "Hey, can I live on you? You take care of your hair, other than this stupid thing over here." I know, and then somehow it ends up on Luke's head, and like fucking Ratatouille or some shit, like pulling Luke's hair is supposed to have guided him through that Rancor battle.
At which point, Luke's like, oh, yeah, it was the Force. It was the Force.
That, like, cheapens the whole
Luke. I know! It was so fucking stupid.
You didn't even earn it.
So I have a question that shouldn't matter, but it's the kind of thing that I care about. Is this, like, a canon book, or...
It is a canon book, yes.
Oh, right. God, oh, for real?
Yes, oh, no. Yes, look it up.
It's... So the whole Force is this lice-sized...
Yeah.
Can we make group of beings that are
now, mind you, the book is comprised of a bunch of kids' stories, so that wasn't the whole book.
It
was
just
like a story in the book, but there were a lot of other stories that were really good. One of which, like Luke and some girl, I don't remember who she was, they were flying through space and saw some blinking light, and they kept following it and couldn't explain what it was. And turns out it's kind of like one of those deep sea fish that has the light hanging right in front of them. Mm-hmm. They were being lured into the mouth of some big, like, space creature. It was pretty neat.
You know, as soon as you said that, I had this thought, like, oh my God, is it a UFO? Like, something about
it. So it's like a bunch of stories told by kids that heard it through a telephone game.
That's a great concept. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Then. Yeah.
Yeah, and like I said, most of them are cool. A few of them, that one in particular being the worst.
Super louse, probably near the bottom.
I just thought, how do you expect me to swallow this shit?
Yeah.
I've seen a Return of the Jedi since, and it doesn't sit well. Doesn't sit well when you see that scene.
Sit there all pissed off. Like,
God damn louse.
Louse on there making Luke do all this bullshit.
It was the Force, God damn it. Anyway, sorry. Went off on a tangent there. Let's get to Jack. What's your selection?
You guys ever watch Farscape?
No.
I've seen a bit at the beginning.
In it, there's the ship that they fly on that the whole group in the show they stole is called the Leviathan. And it's a biomechanical ship that can only be flown by this race. I don't even know what they were called other than pilots. That they actually... They're bred, and then they infuse themselves into the ship. And they can only pilot it. And they talk... Like, the ship has feelings and stuff, and it'll talk to him, and he can translate it to the rest of the crew.
Hmm.
But it was one of the... It's a Jim Henson thing, for one, so that makes it the difference.
I see. So it's a practical, like, puppet...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He was big forearms. You'd always see him, and you never knew how big he was until you saw him next to the rest of the crew, and he was actually a pretty big guy, but he was the coolest-looking character in the world.
What was his name?
Pilot.
That's all
he went by, is Pilot, yeah. And if they ever got taken away, like separated from the ship, they would both ship in, the pilot would die.
So it's like being named Jeeves. Like, you know what that child want to grow up to be.
Guess that kind of settles it.
And you only ever saw one in the whole series. I think that was maybe the last ship. There, I don't know, but it was pretty awesome. The whole series was awesome.
I've heard good things about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right on.
Cool. Back to Jakey here.
You know, I'm not a huge Star Trek guy. I definitely appreciate it, but I never got really deep into it. I never became a Trekkie or anything. But I always liked at least the idea behind the Klingons. I think it goes back to that warlike race thing. I know, I already talked about fucking orcs. And I'm,
they're the same thing. There's the Star Trek.
Shut up.
Orcs.
There's just orcs in space. Go.
But there are things they talk about with the Klingons that I think are fantastic. I don't know. Maybe I'm pulling this out of nowhere and my brain is like Cartman fabricated it, but...
Yeah, I think so. Next.
Fuck off. Yeah. I thought I remember saying Klingons have like redundant organs. So, like, if they're catastrophically damaged in a fight, they have, like, at least enough strength left to get to somewhere to find medical attention. If their first heart burns out, they've got, like, a little backup, you know?
Oh, just to keep them going.
Like, that they're that belligerent and bred for conflict that even their body is like, all right, this at one point, all of this is going to be really fucked up.
That is a good point.
Yeah.
That is a good point.
And I love the idea of something that's been...
A culture so... In war, like intertwined with war,
that it's
biological makeup.
It's no longer this thing that just happens. Yeah. Like sometimes humans go to war. All right, a lot of the time humans go to war. For them, war is like there's no state without it. So I always thought that was cool. You know, the natural selection behind it. You know,
sure. I just realized I totally forgot my turn.
I was going to say you never went.
Yeah. let me see here. I have a race that I absolutely despise.
Oh,
can I bring that to the table? Can I get racist for a minute?
Yeah, please do.
I've always said that if I could live in a fictional place, I'd want to live in the Mushroom Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
But what comes with the Mushroom Kingdom are those little toad people.
Oh, yeah. You got to hear the voices.
Oh, my God. They're so bad. I've never even heard them, like, make words. Like, they just
it's
talk.
It's just chaos.
And as much as I'd want to live in that world, I think I would still be antisocial.
Yeah.
I'd still lock myself away because I'd still hate people.
You'd be Bowser, right?
I'd probably
exterminate the toad race.
Do you like mushrooms?
What's that?
Do you like mushrooms?
Nah, just on pizza.
That might be part of it.
Yeah. But Mario is Italian. He could hook me up with some pizza.
That's
true.
Yeah.
It all works. This is a very well thought out plan.
I can see myself on day two, day three in the Mushroom Kingdom, like trying to fill out a job application at Bowser's castle. Like, I don't know what I could do.
Do you need someone to mop the floor or refill the lava fountains? I don't know.
There it is. I can put bridge back up every time Mario knocks it down.
Would it be you sort of taking the toad people and putting them in bricks for people to find as power-ups? Or
there you go.
Yeah. Or slicing them up to put them on your pizza?
Perfect.
Oh, I don't want to eat them, no.
You can be the guy who stands by with a towel whenever Bowser falls in the lava.
I imagine like, that one of those things would taste like pork. They look like they'd have a pork taste. Like
porky, kind of like too salty and a little chewy.
Yeah.
Like bad pork.
Yeah, like they've just been eating shit their whole life.
God. Fuck Toad.
Toad's a filthy animal.
Bastard.
Oh, my God. Let's see, where are we at? Let's get back over to Sean. What do you got?
For, like, worst races?
No, you just favorite, worst, whatever you got.
Well, we went over the Salacious Crumb race from Star Wars, the Monkey Lizards. But I'll throw out a worst favorite race, I guess. I don't know if anyone's a Dragon Ball fan at all. Like,
I don't know Dragon Ball.
I like me some Dragon Ball.
I was aware of it back in the day. Never really followed it or anything.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mostly read like all of the Akira Toriyama books, like all the manga and stuff, but they have a race in there that's just every character is basically Superman, where, and I mean, you know, one Superman is awesome, but having a race of invincible characters kind of, it's a little tedious, you know, there's only so much you can do with that, you know, it's just not fun. But yeah, I'd have to say the Saiyans from Dragon Ball, just boring, overpowered. No substance, I guess.
All they have to do is train to get a little bit stronger.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, exactly. If the story
gets weak, they got to eat a bean and they get their power back.
That's it. Yeah, that's absolutely it.
Funny, I've read that over the years, you know, with Superman, you know, back in the day, in his OG days, the dude was tough. Like he could push a planet, you know, off his axis. Mm-hmm. And like the writers over the year have progressively had to make him weaker and weaker, because how can you write for a character like that?
Yeah. It's like there was some Superman video game. It wasn't Superman 64. It was a different one. It was like for PlayStation or something, where I thought it was an interesting concept that kind of illustrated the problem with Superman, and also sounds like it would make for a fucking miserable game. But you're playing as Superman, and you don't have like a health bar or anything. You don't take damage. The city of Metropolis has a health bar.
That makes perfect sense to me.
And every time I think about it, I get locked in this thing like, what a cool concept. Like, I would rather fucking die than try and play that game.
Was that the Superman Returns like movie
game? It must have been.
Because
yeah, I think so.
I played the shit out of that game. And I think I remember that. Like, you would see, like, on your map, you'd see a blip and, like, you'd see your health bar start to go
down. Just kind of. Like, putting out fires around the city,
yes,
you know?
Yes, that was a fun game.
Yeah,
it was.
You liked it? I never played it. I just always assumed I wouldn't, because
I had downloaded the demo, which was pretty much, like, gives you free fly around Metropolis, and then you get to fight a bad guy, and then that's the end of the demo. But, I mean, just, you could, like, go at, like, supersonic speeds, and just flying around, and, like, seeing how close you could get to the ground and shit, I mean, that was fun in itself.
I'm sure, yeah.
But once that got bored, I was like, all right, I got to go buy this damn thing. And the story, the game itself wasn't too bad. The mechanics were kind of tough on it. But anyway, not talking about Superman game mechanics, are we? Let's get over to Aaron. What's your next pick?
Well, we've been talking about Star Wars a lot. So, you know, I'm a big fan of sort of evil races. I know you've mentioned orcs already. I like... You know, like when there's something like Harry Potter, I'm always intrigued by like Slytherin, which is just like the house of assholes and stuff. So we're, I guess if you're born into this race, you already have kind of your work cut out for you.
Kind of predisposed to being a dick.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if you know, there's like the Trandoshans, which was like the bounty hunter Bossk and stuff. They're just basically a race of like people who hunt other aliens, and then not like in a cool bounty hunter way, but like as like a kind of lame poacher way. Like they just like killing Wookiees for fur, and
that's their whole like religion is basically the hunt.
Yeah, yeah, is that
the,
exactly.
The upright lizard looking guy.
I totally endorse killing Wookiees though for whatever reason. Not Wookiees. Well,
they make good pelts, so. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So I'm a big fan of those. I think in like Clone Wars, there was a few episodes where, you know, like Jedis would be hunted down by these guys, and they're very like reptilian, and you know they really lean on their asses when they talk. But I was even when I was a kid, I was a big fan of their design. I thought they looked really cool, and the more I learned about them, and the more evil I found them to be, the more intrigued I was. So big fan of those, and I guess the other slaver race, the Zygarians. I don't know if you are familiar with those guys. They're basically,
I don't remember them.
Yeah, they're in the Clone Wars too, and they're basically, they're almost like ancient Egypt. Like they just enslaved people, and it's all about slave labor for them, and they live like kings and queens, and they're just not nice people.
They were in the clones, you say?
Or no, the Clone Wars, like the 3D animated.
Sorry.
So they like kidnap Obi-Wan for a bit, and they have him work in like a slave camp, and you know, he'll be like, try and fight back. So like, okay, well, we won't take it out on you, but like every time you resist, we'll just like kill three slaves, and then, you know, and then just break them.
I vaguely remember this. Same. Yeah. That was such a good series.
Yeah, it was.
So yeah, good. It was great. Yeah.
Being touristic. All right.
The Trandoshans were cool. In that Star Wars MMO, one of the classes had a Trandoshan as your sidekick that you could run around with.
Cool. Oh, really?
He always talked to you about the hunt and their god was a goddess or something like that. Like your sidekick ended up not killing who he was going to, so he thought he was going to be shunned by the goddess or something like that. So it was kind of cool just how their whole life works.
Kind of like Predator, almost.
Yeah.
Where it's just the whole culture is this singular thing.
Yep.
Kind of like the Klingons.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, you know, talking Star Wars, am I skipping?
You're skipping my turn, but that's okay. Hey, go ahead.
Please.
No, right, please.
Fine. He skipped his own turn earlier. So.
Yeah, go ahead.
Zabrax come to mind.
Zabrax.
Like Darth Maul.
Yeah.
This, like, almost classically demonic-looking race that you think, like, oh, yeah, they're evil, right? I mean, like, how do you get around it? And I like that in the Clone Wars series, the glimpses you get of the Zabrak homeworld with, like, the Blood Sisters and all that, it almost totally stops being sci-fi when you reach that area.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes this dark, grim fantasy thing. And I always thought it was so cool the way that series could juggle tones and themes like that without making it feel disjointed.
And you get a lot more of that when you get into that extended universe past the main movies, where you can actually feel that fantasy
flesh
aspect.
It out, you know?
Or you'll get that kind of that medieval knight feel, you know?
It's a very feudal kind of thing going on.
I mean, Kylo Ren in himself is just such the temperamental.
He may as well be
valiant.
Wearing chainmail.
Yeah. I mean, so I love that. I know exactly what you mean.
So yeah, those are one of my favorites.
This is very generic one I have here, but it seems fair enough to mention the just mutants in general.
Oh like my
the
god,
X-Men.
How totally generic.
Yeah.
Right? But it's all encompassing.
Right.
And in those comics, those people or those mutants were scrutinized against.
Oh, sure.
A lot. Come on. They got a lot of shit.
Yeah, that's definitely the widest range of traits across any.
It really is.
Get that catch-all term mutant. Okay. I just thought it was amazing how mutants' mutations were almost always beneficial. Like every now and then you'd get one that looks like ass, but he's probably still better off than the average person.
You'd shoot fireworks out of your hands.
Like yeah.
It didn't serve any purpose.
It looked cool.
Right? Yeah. Did it though.
No.
Watch this.
She's useful one day of the fucking year. Yeah. You have to, you know.
Today's your day, Jubilee.
My day
waits
to shine.
For it like Christmas.
Okay, I'll spice it up then. The mutants being too
spicy,
too lazy of a pick.
No,
let's do the tree people in Lord of the Rings.
Oh hell yeah,
they were amazing when they took down Sauron. Was it that
Saruman's army?
Yeah, the army in that tower. Yeah. That
you know, just cool. Sweeping along the ground and just
taking big rocks and bowling along.
Yeah. They were so cool. I loved them.
I love that there's a bit where you see a bunch of orcs at their feet just like hacking at them with axes, and he just kicks them.
Yeah.
It's like, this isn't a thing that feels pain. But, you ever tried to cut down a tree? It takes a little while.
Yeah, especially a big round tree.
That's trying to kill you back.
But you get to, at least I got to like them really quick. And then, like, in that battle scene, you see one get set ablaze.
Yeah, that was hard to
watch.
That
was really hard to watch. Like, oh my God.
Dude, I know exactly how you. I was so thrilled because they must have known how weirdly heart wrenching that was. Because right after, like, they jump around a little. When the floodwaters come
in, you see him getting put out.
You see him dunk himself, and he's like,
oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
So, but I totally know what you mean. The first time I saw it, I was like, oh no, for some reason.
I think the look on his face was pain and anguish, too, so you could tell he was hurting.
It was gnarly.
I forgot that where he runs into the oncoming wave to put himself out. I thought he had perished.
No, he's golden.
He's good. Yeah,
well, he's scorched, but trees burn and then they grow back. Whatever.
Sure.
Makes them stronger.
Yeah, be all right.
I think it was such an impact or had such gravity because. You know, just being the slow and wise, deep talking. You assume them to be very gentle.
Like, kind of noble.
Very much so.
Dumb.
I mean, very well said.
You're dumb.
But had they come onto the scene aggressive and everything.
If they were, it
wouldn't have meant.
They were like shooting vines out of their hands and eviscerating people. You'd be like, you know what?
We need to burn more trees. Burn.
Yeah. But no, they were just like. You know what it is? It's the thing that, like, they're this enclave of semi-peaceful creatures, and the war kind of comes to them.
Right.
You know, they're convinced to go out and fight, so when you see them get hurt, you're like, oh, this didn't have to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
We were just being trees.
Yeah,
oh,
they
this
were
came
totally
here.
Content.
All right. Does anybody have any other offerings for this category before we move on?
I think I got through my favorites.
I had one more that we mentioned real quick.
What's that?
The Predators.
Oh, shit.
Oh, we didn't mention that already?
Well, Jake had mentioned that.
Okay,
their
yeah.
whole being revolves around.
There's a new Predator movie.
Yeah?
Yeah, I have to see. I've watched it on my phone. I got to watch the trailer and see if it actually is piquing my interest.
It looks like it might be cool.
It's a good director.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Shane Black, I think.
And it doesn't
he
look
did
like
Iron
it's...
Man 2. I don't know if I
he did Iron Man 3.
He did Iron Man 3.
Yeah, it was Iron Man 3.
Even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, but have you seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang? I fucking hate that title, but it's another Robert Downey Jr. movie that he directed.
I don't like the name of that, so
I know. Yeah, I know. That's what stopped me from watching it for years, but when I did, I was like, oh, fuck, this is good.
Pretty much any action movie that takes place during Christmas,
he
either wrote or directed, other than Die Hard. But,
if Predator takes place in Christmas, I'm walking out.
You know what? We're done.
Yeah. Did the second one have a Christmas theme at all to it with Danny Glover?
Predator? No. I don't think so.
You know, I haven't even seen the second one.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, that's what
horrible.
I hear.
Don't watch it.
I won't.
So, but yeah, it looks like this isn't a reboot. It looks like they're just using that same name with a whole new story, right? Oh, is it The Predator?
Yeah, I thought it was Predator. I think it said The Predator.
Okay, I'm sorry. I missed that detail.
Coming soon, The Aliens.
One race that I forgot to mention, the Society Sixens.
Oh, yeah.
Who could forget them?
Famed for their impeccable fashion sense.
And their crafting of t-shirts.
Known across the galaxy.
Canned Air t-shirts at that, Jake.
An industrious and dexterous people.
And their home decor, too.
Indeed.
Yeah. They know how to make bathroom mats and curtains, let me tell you what.
Yeah, that was a recent skill they acquired, but boy,
pillows
they've sure
and
taken
bath towels and beach towels.
And just about now, Aaron and Sean are being like, what the fuck
mentally
did we get
checking
into?
Checking out.
Yeah. But no, what's happening is you found yourself in the middle of a commercial.
Yeah.
Society
Six.
Oh,
I was Googling Society Six. I was like, I've never heard of that. Can you
every
tell
listener's
me
favorite thing is to suddenly stumble into an advertisement.
Yeah, society6.com/CandairePod.
That's how we keep our numbers high.
That's where you can get your very own t-shirt, your very own mug, your decal, all kinds of happy shit
get
on there.
Get yourself some canned ware.
Oh! Amazing, Jake.
Thank
Amazing.
You. That's what they call me.
He's head of marketing.
Hey.
Once more, society6.com/CanDarePod. Go over there and get some merch, or go over to patreon.com where you can also get some merch. A little more expensive, but we'll know you love us that way. Mm-hmm. We'll know you love us. All right, let's swing open the door to the comic vault really quick. Jake, would you like to go first?
I sure would. Mine's a little shortish because, you know, I can't sit. God damn it. Every time I say that, I'm like, why do you just say that?
I'm sorry.
I just hit the reset button on this
whole thing. Mine just goes there. Go ahead.
All right, so my comic is a little short, but my genitalia are average size.
There we are.
Extra Fabulous Comics. I could sit here and read you 16 different panels from blah, 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 blah. Suffice to say, this is just, it's one of those web comics where the style of the art and the style of the humor come together kind of perfectly for me. Okay. Maybe it's just a personal preference deal, but I swear these have never failed to make me laugh, so I'm going to quote you two. One is the most recent. One's probably my favorite.
Okay.
I'll start with my favorite. Something that I've thought about, I swear, in one form or another, like every week since I saw it, it just seems to pop into my head. Just a panel of a man hiding in the bushes, watching people pass. And he's got a little internal monologue that says, you can pick your friends, and you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose. Without a gun. And in the last panel, he pulls a gun out of his belt and stares fixedly at this dude who's clearly going to be his next victim.
What the
and
fuck? Just,
and that's the kind of thing you can come to expect from Extra Fabulous Comics. And I'm a little biased because one time, independent of this podcast, on Twitter, I sent a little tweet. I was like, hey, all your stuff is good. And the artist replied, thanks. Love you. So I guess you could say it's pretty serious.
I'm excited to see how they respond to this. Absolutely.
And the most recent is a fellow sits there thinking, man, it's so hard to make friends as an adult. Maybe I should just try going out and talking to people.
With a gun.
A hard cut to the front page of the newspaper. Man stabbed in broad daylight. Quote the assailant, he just started talking to me like some kind of freak. Extra Fabulous Comics. Check it out on Twitter at Extra Fabulous.
Only that would blip on your radar.
Mm-hmm. I know, right?
Yeah. I'll have to check it out, though.
Sorry that you're subjected to my humor week after week.
No. It's just I would never stumble on something like that. Yeah. When you bring this shit, sometimes I'm like, how does he find these wonderful toys?
Keeps you young. There was a time when I had more time than friends. The ratios evened out a little. But let me tell you, way back when.
All right, very good, Jake. Aaron, Sean, who would like to go next?
So there was a comic that I've been... One of my favorite comics that I wanted to talk about. I'm not sure like how obscure this needs to be or not. It's not a super obscure comic, but I've been thinking about a lot because the Deadpool movie just came out and the Royal Wedding just happened. And...
Yeah.
The book that kind of links the two of them in obscure ways is Ecstatics by Peter Milligan and Mike Allred. Have you guys read that one?
No.
So really briefly, it was part of the Marvel Knights line that, you know, Quezada and Axel Alonso, I believe. Actually, maybe not Axel, but sort of in the early 2000s when they were sort of reinvigorating the Marvel world.
Right.
They did a take. They actually canceled X-Force, the Rob Liefeld one that everyone knows with Cable and Domino and all those guys, and they reintroduced them with Mike Allred's art, like Mike Allred from Mad Men, and it was sort of a group that was a reality TV show mutant team that had Dupe on it. It had he's probably the most famous member of it. It had Dead Girl. It had Zeitgeist, who was a character who just appeared in Deadpool. And it was sort of looking at the idea of superhero as celebrity, which has been done a few times since then. You know, Mark Miller likes to do that all the time. But they were some of the first that I had seen that had done it, you know, not including Watchmen. And it was a really cool, surreal book that would like constantly kill, like even in the first issue they kill off pretty much their entire team and then they have to cast new members for like the following issues, and you usually have people die every issue, but it would just like boost the ratings of this team and it would be great for their kind of their Q rating. And so they got in real life, they got a lot of sort of negative publicity because Peter Milligan was going to have Princess Diana come back from the dead as a mutant and join the team. And
wow.
Yeah. And they had pages. It was like ready to go. And then this huge backlash happened. So they had to really quickly like change her hair. And she just became this pop star who had died and come back to life. But they had to really quickly change it. And you could even tell like on the early covers and the early art, that's kind of Princess Diana's face, but just with a different hair. It was a really cool book. And one thing that it did that I really like is it was this book originally did not get approved by the Comics Code, which was really big at the time. And so as a result, the Marvel editorial, you know, they talked about it and they were like, you know what? Fuck the Comics Code. And this was sort of the book that was the end of the Comics Code, nice. Which was something that, wow. You know, I don't like very much. Like, I kind of hate the Comics Code. I think it ruined comics for decades.
Sure.
And so this was sort of the beginning of a new era of storytelling. So that's one that I'm a huge fan of. It's it was originally X-Force, and then they relaunched it as X-Statics, X-STATIX. And it was a pretty big series for maybe about 4 or 5 years, and then eventually they ended, but you could still see the characters show up every now and then. Again, Dupe being the most prevalent character.
Yeah. That's who I'm sitting here the whole time. Since you mentioned X-Force, I was sitting here scratching my head like, what's his name? What's his name? What's his name? Yeah. Dupe. Yeah. Yes, the little green blobby thing, right?
Yeah. The green potato, yeah. Yeah.
Now, I could be crossing my streams here, but was X-Statics, I thought, wasn't Speedball involved with that team? And then he goofed and became Penance? Or like...
So he's part of the New Warriors. They had a similar premise. This was a few years later. Again, a reality TV show superhero team. And so then they went and tried to stop Nitro, I think, and he blew up a school, and that's what started the Civil War.
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, and that was a series, I think, that was, I hadn't read it, but it was supposed to be really funny, maybe not quite as subversive as X-Statics was, but same idea. So you're not thinking of the right group, but it's a very similar premise.
Okay.
This guy knows his shit, doesn't he? And we have a
I read a lot of comics.
I'm embarrassed.
Yeah. I read a lot of comics in 2000s. So you could talk about the Avengers now, and I'd be like, they got She-Hulk or something on it? I'm not sure. Right.
Well, they have, what, She-Wolverine, She-Iron Man, She-Thor. I think most of like the main
the She-Avengers.
Yeah. She-Avengers.
Yeah. I think they're kind of rolling back on that though. I think they're bringing back a lot of the OG Avengers. But
I heard something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not too up to date on that yet, so I got to catch up.
Yeah, it was just getting a little carried away with itself there for a while, wasn't it? I mean, they were really trying to pull us away from those characters that we've grown with and shove us into something new. Not that there's anything wrong with something new, but I don't know. I'm excited to see the Fantastic Four
come back. I was just going to say that. Yeah, I'm going to grab some of them.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Very good. What about Sean? Do you have a comic to talk about?
Yeah. So kind of actually talking about Extra Fabulous Comics... really reminded me a lot of another webcomic called Perry Bible Fellowship. I don't know if anyone's heard of this. Yeah, that's good stuff, too. If you like Extra Fabulous, this kind of checks off that same twisted, just awfully amazing sense of humor that Extra Fabulous kind of gives off as well. I think the guy who does Perry Bible Fellowship has been doing it for... maybe 10 years or more. Like, there's such a huge backlog of
comics. I think it's got to be more. I was reading it in university.
Yeah, right. So, you know, like, you could just sit there and read and read and read for hours, and you'd probably just be busting a gut the whole time. His stuff is so good.
Yeah.
But I actually, another book that I was just reading was called I Kill Giants by Joe Kelly and J.M. Kendamura. I don't know if anyone's read or heard of this one. It's an image book from... maybe 2010-ish, somewhere around there. I actually don't want to say too much about it without... Like, I would be so, upset if I gave away the amazing reveal. that happens in this story. But it is about like a young girl who is dealing with some family problems. You don't know what those family problems are, but she's really involved in Dungeons and Dragons and fantasy worlds and stuff like that. And she's using those to cope with what's happening at home. It's just a really heartfelt, fantastic read that I think, you know, regardless of what genres you like reading, if it's superhero or drama or crime or whatever, this is definitely worth the time.
They made a movie based off of that. I've seen it on Netflix.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it just came out in the last year or two.
Yeah.
Like, it's recent, yeah.
You know, I started watching it. It was really kind of hard to get into because I didn't know when I was in for it all. And I ended up stopping about 20 minutes in, but I might have to recheck that out again.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the movie can do the book justice, just because the book explores, using art, some of the really interesting ideas about like a kid's imagination, for example.
Mm.
And it just really is, yeah, it's something else.
Sounds really cool. Have you ever talked about that on the show?
No, I don't think I have. It sounds very familiar. I think a friend of mine suggested it to me.
It does sound a little familiar. Yeah. But very cool. Yeah. It sounds good.
Right on.
Yeah.
Are you guys Joe Kelly fans at all, or like any of the books he's written? Like, he's done some Spider-Man, and I think he was he was kind of the guy who made Deadpool funny.
No, to be honest, I've never read a lot of Deadpool. Yeah. Ironically, the comic I'm about to bring to the table here.
Yeah. Do you guys read Spider-Man at all? Like Amazing Spider-Man and stuff?
Did we read it or see it? What did you say? I'm sorry.
Have you guys been reading Spider-Man?
Spider-Man, I check in and out with over the years. Like, when I first started reading Spider-Man was in the 90s during the whole clone saga.
Oh, yeah.
Which so many people put down, but I mean, maybe it's just because, you know, they always say you fall in love with your first.
Yeah, that was your gateway into
that
it.
That was my gateway in, and I ended up loving that series for the most part.
Fair enough.
90s comics were so much fun. I don't know what the difference was. You got a lot more story, though, than you do now, but I don't know, Spider-Man stories that have disappointed. How about the One More Day series? You remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, what a kick in the balls that was. I was so salty about that I quit reading Spider-Man for 3 or 4 years.
That was a bad one.
It was so bad.
Yeah. The only reason I mention it, though, was because Joe Kelly wrote one of my favorite comics around that time. From like that Brand New Day series. Like, he did, I don't know if you guys ever read it, when like the Rhino was trying to go like legit and good and like settle down with his wife. Did you guys read that one at all?
No.
It was a 2-issue series or a 2-issue arc, and it's just one of the most heartbreaking stories, and it made the Rhino one of the coolest Marvel villains. So if you ever check it, if you could find it, like, that's definitely Joe Kelly's thing. That's what made me first notice him and made him like one of my favorite superhero writers.
So does it make the Rhino into somewhat of like a tragic story?
Yeah, Yeah, there's definitely tragedy involved.
I've got to read that. That sounds awesome. Because I've always wanted there to be more depth to Rhino other than just like...
It never really was anything. Just a big guy.
Yeah,
totally.
In a robot.
This would be the one to check out.
No.
No. You are mistaken.
Very good. All right, well, I just sat here and said, well, I don't read Deadpool. Guess what I have to talk about today? I've got
a book. It's called Spider-Man.
I think it's a very appropriate book to bring to the table. And Jack, I think maybe you actually have brought it to the table, like when we first got it, because we got this at the same time. We got this at the Cincinnati Comic Expo.
Oh, okay.
2 years ago, it was an exclusive there, I think. But, or not the comic, but this cover, maybe.
Yeah.
Deadpool versus Thanos. Appropriate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this book explains what I was oblivious to you guys telling me within the past 3 or 4 episodes, that Deadpool and Thanos both lust for death.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
And I guess I had known that and forgotten because I had read this book, and that's kind of what it revolves around.
Mm-hmm.
Both of their infatuations with Lady Death. And he keeps talking about how sexy she looks, and she's just a skeleton. I mean, just a skeleton in a robe.
Hey, you know,
still got the curves.
Takes all kinds.
Beauty's in the eyes of the beholder, I suppose. But it pretty much starts with Deadpool looking for ways he can die. Because Thanos has put a...
It's a very different approach.
Well, Thanos has put a curse on him that keeps him from dying. And therefore, him being kept from dying keeps him away from her, Lady sense. Death. The embodiment of death in the Marvel Universe. And so it opens up with him crawling ashore of Dr. Doom's island. And you see Doom, you know, in his suite there in a robe. He's got his metal mask on, but he's taking it easy. He's been relaxing, and here's a light knock on the door, and he opens it, and it's just Deadpool with a shotgun. Boom! Right in the chest. And as he's sitting there, you know, laying there bleeding out, Deadpool's immediately calling up the Avengers. Hey, you know, I just did in 2 minutes what you guys have been trying to do for years here, so I think maybe now I could get on board. But then he says, okay, I gotta go. You know, and he puts the phone away and waits for Doom to do something back to him. Because he obviously knows that it's probably going to take him out. Which he does. He, you know, makes some motion with his hand and he goes flying through the air. And I don't know where he lands. But though it doesn't kill him, it throws him momentarily into this purgatory world. Which it looks to me like he's just been flirting, you know, with ways to get killed just to visit this realm temporarily before he's pulled back. So he can see her. And this time when he goes, she's being, like, she's on the other side of, like, a mirror, and she's being pulled into the darkness. And all she's saying is, help me. Please help me. Find me. And he's like, oh, crap, what is this? And all he can think of is it's Thanos. So he immediately sets out to find Thanos. And what happens is that when he catches up with Thanos, Thanos is, like, so sick of his shit, so sick of him. He goes, I know I put a curse on you that I can't kill you, but I'm going to beat the living hell out of you anyway. And he beats him to like a mush on the ground.
I remember that.
And in that moment, he visits that purgatory world again and sees death being, again, pulled away. Help me, help me, please help me. This
Isn't
time
that the dead or the Bob Ross looking Deadpool with the big afro?
One of them was him like with a porn stash, kind of looking like John Holmes in a lounge. I don't remember what the second... No, the second one was just him, like, in, like, Arctic. And sees her through the ice and, again, drifting away. Well, it's in that moment that Thanos... Because he had lifted the curse. He's like, I'm just going to kill this guy. But he realizes that Deadpool is able to communicate with her in some fashion that he isn't able to. So he puts the curse back, you know, to where he can't die. He goes, I realize I have to keep you alive because... We've got to find her. In that moment, you realize it wasn't Thanos that's taken her. And that he's just as concerned. So the end is the two of them teaming up
that's
to go find her.
Awesome.
It was a good book, and it was, I think, worth talking about during, for, you know,
how's the
both
time?
Of them being in the theater.
This will be called Deadpool versus Thanos, the box office battle.
And it's funny, because I flip to the middle and see The Amazing Spider-Man number 1 by Dan Slott, the book that got me off the Spider-Man the last time. The one where he went international and was driving the spider car in Hong Kong. And I was like, all right, my ass is out.
Let's pump the brakes.
All right, I think that's all we have. Anything else, guys?
No,
that's it.
Let's move on to Sean and Aaron and talk about the part-time night. Thank you so much for being with us, guys.
Thank you for having us. Sean, do you want to start or?
Yeah, sure. I'll
Just tell us
best.
First. Tell us about the anthology a little bit, and then tell us about your guys' contribution to the anthology.
Yeah, so Toronto Comics is an anthology that started, I think, 5 years ago. Makes sense, we're on our fifth volume now, by Andrew Stevenson. It's been a few volumes. There's been a good number of creators who have kind of, you know, jumped on board each year. And we've had forwards written by some awesome, amazing creators like Jim Sub and Jeff Lemire and and others.
Chip Zdarsky is
Chip
this
Zdarsky,
year.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And yeah, the books are usually somewhere between maybe 14 and 18 stories long. Stories are between four and 10 pages. And each one kind of takes place in or around the city in some way, shape, or form, but featuring all different genres of writing. So you'll get some fantasy, some sci-fi, some crime. They're generally all ages, I would say. Is that about right, Aaron?
I think they try and not alienate younger readers, even though some things might not be geared towards them. They'll never be something that's like, there's no rated X Toronto stories as much as I try and push for them. But yeah.
Yeah, maybe volume 6. We'll see
what we can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. 14 to 18 entries. That's got to be a big book.
Yeah. It's usually a good size.
Yeah, the newest one seems to be about 200 pages, a little more than that. So, yeah.
Wow. Worth your money, then.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So, Part-Time Night, what kind of brought you to this story? You know, I imagine you see some of these other entries, and you got to think to yourself, across all of these stories, almost everything has to be covered. So, were you trying to kind of carve out a niche here, something that stands out, or was it just sort of independent, your contribution, no matter what else is on there?
Aaron, yeah, he wrote this one, so he kind of pitched it to me. Where did you get the idea from this, or like, why'd you choose this?
Well, I'd say that I'm a big fantasy fan. Should I say what the story is about first, or would you like me to?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, Part-Time Night. Night is spelled K-N-I-G-H-T, and it's a story that takes place at medieval times, or an analog for it, since I don't know if we have the rights to medieval times. But you know, anyone who's
rolled the dice on that one.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone who's seen Cable Guy knows about probably what medieval times is. We have one in Toronto, and it's basically dinner and a show. You come, you eat ye olde medieval style food, and you know you don't even get forks. You sort of eat out of trenchers, and you watch a jousting show, and it's just good times had by all. And so I'm a big fantasy fan, and Sean and I have bonded over our love of the fantasy genre. So I thought it would be kind of funny to tell a story that takes place at medieval times, and as in like people who work there and stuff, but getting embroiled in this sort of Game of Thrones like vying for the role of the king. And I thought it would be just like a funny juxtaposition of having just employees there plotting to, you know, overthrow each other and poison each other and what have you. So I think that I had, or both Sean and I have contributed to at least two of the previous books each. And so we had a good handle of sort of what stories have already been told and what haven't. So I knew that when I pitched this, it wasn't something that had been published by Toronto Comics yet. And they seemed to really love the idea. I think we were one of the only the only pairs that came in as a pair. Usually they will, if they accept a script, they'll go to their stable of artists and find someone for it. But I specifically said, like, I want Sean on this. And they said, okay, and that's how we got to working on it.
I gotta say, I remembered my question from earlier, but before I go back to that question, I just wanted to say the comic is gorgeous. Is it watercolor?
It really is. Yeah, it's all painted in watercolor with some ink.
That is fantastic. That's something you don't see every day. No. You know, we see a lot of comics come through this show, and that's one thing I haven't seen.
It's only every once in a while, I think, that we'll come across one.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like a classic art medium kind of brought into it.
It's, you know, not only the painting, but you also get the texture of the paper it's on.
Bring something to it.
I love that. It's so good. I'm sorry, my voice is getting kind of raspy. What I was going to ask before, with the Toronto Comics Anthology, do they carry any, like, overlaying themes, or are they just, is it just that they're, like, Canadian comic creators?
I'd say, and Sean, you might have something else to add, but I'd say that beyond the idea that every story has to feature Toronto, so you could say that the city is a theme.
I
find that maybe the mandate of the book itself seems to, they want a diversity of stories that sort of represents the city itself. So they don't just want any one genre or any one viewpoint. They want to hear from a wide variety of contributors, just as focusing on culture specifically. Toronto's, you know, one of the most multicultural cities, at least in Canada, and so we want that, or the editors want to reflect that, and they have done that pretty much since I think the second volume, trying to seek out other voices, and so that's something that they definitely gravitate towards.
So I know the area we live in here in Ohio, Columbus, has become kind of a hotbed of comic creators.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For whatever reason, anybody who's trying to get their comic off the ground, they seem to end up here in one way or another.
Right.
So would you say Toronto being kind of this melting pot of people pursuing the same thing, is this a recent phenomenon, or is this something that's been kind of under the surface for a long time, but it's just recently exploded?
Sean, do you have any thoughts on that? Because
I don't think it's a new thing at all. Not since, I mean, I haven't been making comics for too long, but since I have been making comics, it feels like the community has always just been, like Aaron said, just a melting pot of all different, you know, backgrounds and just tons of different kind of unique people giving their own spins and takes on things. So I don't know that it's. I would say it's a new thing. What do you think, Aaron?
Is this... So, yeah, I agree. The only thing I'd say is that maybe, and again, I can only speak to sort of my own experiences in the industry or in the community, that maybe what's been newer is a lot of mainstream comic creators are located in Toronto now, so it seems to be a hotbed there. You know, we mentioned, Jim Zub, Ty Templeton, Ryan North, Chip Zdarsky, they've all, you know, written forwards to our books, and they're all, you know, Marvel creators who, you know, are living in Toronto. And they're definitely not the only ones. And I mean, Brian Lee O'Malley's maybe a big name. You know, he was the Scott Pilgrim guy, and that's a book that is very Toronto-centric, like big scenes take place in major Toronto locations. So I think what might be... Yeah, newer is a lot of mainstream talent being located in Toronto. But I could be wrong with that.
I kind of know what you're talking about with the... Maybe new isn't the way to put it, like the new thing happening. I mean, the comic creator, you know, realm, for instance, here in Columbus has always been here. But I think what you're talking about is like in the past 3 to 4 years, you know, we're not in that community, but we definitely observe it.
For sure.
Yeah.
And... yeah, I mean, the explosion we've seen, not only in our at our cons, when we start doing this, artist alleys were just these little kind of pissant things you kind of avoided a lot of times.
Yeah.
It was like going through, a beggar's alley, like, please, sir, please. But now there's just, they're thriving.
It feels like a recent thing.
It does. I mean, and there's something that's always been there, but now is just getting the attention it seems like it deserves.
Yeah, it's all kind of coming together. The people have been working at it for a long time, and only now are they getting a return on their investment.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So do you guys do any conventions at all?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say, Sean, you probably do more conventions than I do. It's a little harder to sell your stuff as a writer. You're really just selling your books, I find. But, you know, artists have... And Sean, I mean, you can contradict.
Yeah, no, that's about right. I think we have a little easier time, kind of getting our work out there at conventions, anyways. So yeah, I tend to do the big ones here in Toronto, like Comic Con and Fan Expo, and last weekend was actually TCAF, which is, I don't know if you guys have heard of TCAF at all. It's Comics Arts Festival. Now, it's one of the best comic festivals, I think, in North America, purely if you're looking for comics, because they don't do cosplay there. There's no print walls. It's just people who make their books and sell them. So if you want comics, this is where you go in the city. It's once a year kind of thing. But it's also, I think, one of my all-time favorite shows. But sometimes I'll do the shows in the States as well if the schedule allows it, but it's mostly the local stuff.
I'm excited to get back into going to cons.
Absolutely. I think it's been a little while.
It's been a long dipped time, out. We got like... really fucking sick of going to cons. But whenever Wizard World comes to Columbus, it's like Christmas in summer.
It burns you out quick, but I'll be damned if you don't start to miss it as soon as you step away.
Yeah. Come that Monday, I'll be like, fuck this.
Done till next year.
Should have slept.
So where is the best place for people to check out the Toronto Comics Anthology and Part-Time Night?
So I actually think that Part-Time Night is one of the books or one of the stories that is like a free sample that they give out. So, but if you go to tocomics.com, and that's tocomix.com, That's the Toronto Comics website. And I think you can order the book through that site. And right at the top, yeah, I'm looking at it right now, there are two free preview comics, and Part-Time Night is one of the two. So you can just click on that, and I think it takes you to an imager, or no, it just takes you to the full, I think, 9-page story.
Yeah, we're actually looking at it right now. And again, these watercolors are freaking gorgeous. I just absolutely love it. Just love it.
Yeah, it's, awesome. It's always a good thing when your artist goes up to you and says, hey, like, I want to kind of take a little bit extra time to, like, paint it out all, you know, traditionally with watercolors. Is that okay? And, you know, I feel like, yeah, that's fine. Go, go, go.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. I've gotten no sometimes on that, where they specifically ask for the digital coloring, which is totally fine. I have no problems with that. I just prefer to kind of, I guess, get my hands dirty with actual paints.
Exactly. And, like, yeah, not to discredit any digital coloring at all.
No, but, I mean, not at all.
This is... I don't know. There's something about seeing the color bleed outside the box a little bit that I just absolutely adore. I love that. I don't know. It has that feeling that hands were in it, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, guys, I guess it's... Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because it's harder to see that, you know, more often, I think, like you said, you know? It's just not done as much, which, you know, that is what it is. But sure. I'm always happy to work that way. It's more fun,
and boy does it show. It shows you're having fun. Guys, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I was able to find Sean's Twitter handle at Sean Daly. Aaron, did you have one?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. It's just at I think just at Aaron Feldman.
Okay.
So AaronFeldman.
We weren't sure because when
there
we
were
typed
a few.
It,
yeah, there were a wanted few to be of absolutely
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, we didn't want to just assume.
There no, was I got one. I got that premium tag, so that's just my name. But I post. Nice. I think I post about once a month, and it's just about like how good the waffle double down is at KFC or something.
A tweet worth tweeting,
indeed.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, guys, once again, thanks so much for being with us here today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much for having us. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com, where you can check out our special guests, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, visit the Hall of Heroes, check out some of the videos from our YouTube page, click on the merch button and buy a towel.
Spoken with conviction.
And if you have any comments or complaints, send us an email on our contacts page.
And don't forget, on Twitter, we are at CannedAirPod, and Instagram, @canned_air. If you like what we do, head on down to Patreon, drop a 5-spot, join the Founders Club.
We'll buy a towel. You didn't sound certain, though.
Should I say it?
Clock.
Mug. Decal. Maybe a shirt.
Sticker. Right.
Boy, with enthusiasm like that, how can you say no, people? All right, well, I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Sean.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
I think they should have stopped writing that movie about halfway through. Like, that was the big problem, is they tried to do way too much.
Do you guys hear that?
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.